सहनावतु सहनो भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै। ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्ति।
विल्चान चैप्टर 3 वर्सेस 28 टू 32।
तत्वभित्तु महाबाहो तत्वभित्तु महाबाहो गुणकर्म विभागयोः गुणकर्म विभागयोः गुणागुणेषु वर्तन्ते गुणागुणेषु वर्तन्ते इति मत्वा न सज्जते इति मत्वा न सज्जते। तत्वभित्तु महाबाहो गुणकर्म विभागयोः गुणागुणेषु वर्तन्ते इति मत्वा न सज्जते। प्रकृते गुणसम्मूढाः प्रकृते गुणसम्मूढाः सज्जन्ते गुणकर्मसु सज्जन्ते गुणकर्मसु तान कृत्स्नविधो मन्दान् तान कृत्स्नविधो मन्दान् कृत्स्नभिन्न विचालयेत् कृत्स्नभिन्न विचालयेत्। प्रकृते गुणसम्मूढाः सज्जन्ते गुणकर्मसु तान कृत्स्नविधो मन्दान् कृत्स्नभिन्न विचालयेत्। मयि सर्वाणि कर्माणि मयि सर्वाणि कर्माणि सन्न्यस्याद्यात्मचेतसा सन्न्यस्याद्यात्मचेतसा निराशीर्निर्ममो भूत्वा निराशीर्निर्ममो भूत्वा युज्यस्व विगतज्वरः युज्यस्व विगतज्वरः। मयि सर्वाणि कर्माणि सन्न्यस्याद्यात्मचेतसा निराशीर्निर्ममो भूत्वा युज्यस्व विगतज्वरः। इमे मतमिदं नित्यम् इमे मतमिदं नित्यम् अनुतिष्ठन्ति मानवाः अनुतिष्ठन्ति मानवाः श्रद्धावन्तो न सूयन्तः श्रद्धावन्तो न सूयन्तः। मुच्यन्ते तेऽपि कर्मभिः मुच्यन्ते तेऽपि कर्मभिः। इमे मतमिदं नित्यम् अनुतिष्ठन्ति मानवाः श्रद्धावन्तो न सूयन्तः मुच्यन्ते तेऽपि कर्मभिः। एत्वे तदभ्यसूयन्तः एत्वे तदभ्यसूयन्तः नानुतिष्ठन्ति मे मतम् नानुतिष्ठन्ति मे मतम् सर्वज्ञानविमूढांस्तान् सर्वज्ञानविमूढांस्तान् विद्धिनष्टानचेतसः विद्धिनष्टानचेतसः एते तदभ्यसूयन्तः नानुतिष्ठन्ति मे मतम् सर्वज्ञानविमूढांस्तान् विद्धिनष्टानचेतसः।
Lord Krishna in verse 28, which we saw last, addresses Arjuna as Mahabaho. Mahabaho means mighty armed, strong person. Really, a strong person is one who is able to see each and every one, including oneself, from the point of view of gunas and atma and action. Very clearly, one who has this clarity to distinguish the consciousness from the gunas, which ultimately manifest as action. So therefore he is telling here Arjuna, O Mahabaho, with true insight into the distinctions of gunas and actions, knowing that gunas abide in gunas is not attached. A wise person clearly sees the distinction between the Atma and the gunas. Gunas the Prakriti, Atma the Spirit. So gunas will abide in gunas. If you have sasana for painting, you will have people, you will be surrounded with people who have interest in painting. Birds of the same feather flock together. So if you have been attracted to a certain area, it is because you have those vasanas. Right? In fact, if you did not have a spark, others cannot influence you and make it a conflagration. The fact that you had a spark, they are able to fan it and make it a conflagration. So therefore we say, no, these people have got me into this habit. It's impossible. You must have had a spark, inclination. And then they were able to, either consciously they did it or unconsciously they did it, but they were able to do it because you already had the weakness. So gunas abide in gunas. Guna guneshu vartante. Iti matva. Having known this, knowing this, they do not get attached. They don't get involved. They don't get lost. They clearly see in the others as well as in themselves. So to explain this, we usually give an example of the zoo. When you go to the zoo, you clearly see how the animals function according to their vasanas. You love them, you relate with them mentally with the same equanimity. But you understand the nature and accordingly you deal with them when it comes to practical. So within you there should be no hatred for anybody. In fact, you should have love for everybody if you understand this. But externally you see their gunas and according to the gunas you deal with them. So you are able to maintain a working relationship with everybody. You know the quality of every object, every being, and accordingly you relate with that object or being. But as far as inside is concerned, you have the sameness when you relate with everybody. That's what he is saying in this verse. We'll move on to the next verse.
Prakritir guna sammoodaha, prakritir guna sammoodaha, sajjante guna karmasu, sajjante guna karmasu, tana krishna vido mandan, tana krishna vido mandan, krishna vinna vichalaye, krishna vinna vichalaye, prakritir guna sammoodaha, sajjante guna karmasu, tana krishna vido mandan, krishna vinna vichalaye.
Those deluded by the gunas of Prakriti, those who do not see the distinction clearly and get deluded, get confused by the gunas, they are attached to the functions of the gunas. They get attached to the functions of the gunas. The one of perfect knowledge means one who is able to clearly see the distinction, one who has got the wisdom and not just information. He should not unsettle the dull-witted whose knowledge is imperfect. He is basically saying the same thing what he said in verse number 26. In 26 what did he say? Wise man should not unsettle the minds of the ignorant. Rather he should lift the knowledge and make it attractive. He is explaining what he said in 26, in 27, 28 and 29. Again he is saying, therefore I said so in 26, which he is repeating in 29. Reasoning. You see 26, what is the verse saying? Saying that wise person should not unsettle the unwise. And the wise person should execute the actions, make it attractive. Isn't this what he said in verse 26?
Yes.
Why wise person should not unsettle the minds of the ignorant? What is the difference basically between the wise person and unwise person? Wise person knows that he is Atma. Unwise person doesn't know that he is Atma. Since he doesn't know that he is Atma, he gets trapped in the gunas. He is attached to the gunas. So, wise person also has gunas. Unwise person also has gunas. Prakriti is there in everybody. Every body has a nature. Every mind has a nature. The intellect has a nature. It will function according to its nature. If you are predominantly sattvic, you will function accordingly. Otherwise, rajasic or tamasic, whatever might be predominant in you, accordingly your guna structure, according to that guna structure, you will function. But a wise person clearly sees this, that this is guna, this is not me. I am different. He sees the negative things arising in him also, maybe in the guna, some thought coming. But he clearly detaches from it, doesn't get involved. Therefore, he controls it. Whereas the unwise person gets too close, too attached. The more the closeness, lesser the control. Always to control, there must be some distance. Whether it is cricket or golf or whatever it might be, you have to watch. If you are not watching, the distance has been closed. Once the distance is closed, you will not have perfect shot. You understand? Even in cricket, they say when a bowler is bowling a bouncer, a good player will watch the ball and then leave it. A fellow who doesn't know how to play, he takes his eyes off. Once you take your eyes off, it is a chance. You are not leading your life. You are not there on the cricket field out of choice. You are there out of chance. That's all. So watching. Watching means the watcher is different. What is being watched is different. There is a distance created. Are you with me? This is what makes the difference between wise and unwise. This is the difference. The wise person watches other people functioning according to their gunas, and also his gunas arising. Since he is watching, he controls and takes a decision whether to go along with it or whether to put a stop to it. So he says in verse 29, this is why I told you in 26 that unwise should not be unsettled by the wise person. Why? Because unwise fellow doesn't know this. He is not watching it. He gets attached. Since he gets attached, he goes by the flow. The anger takes him across. Jealousy takes him across. Greed takes him across. Fear, lust, all this takes the fellow across. He is swiped away by these emotions, by these gunas, by his likes and dislikes. That is why he is functioning like that. Maurice Maeterlinck has said, I am not quoting it exactly, maybe some small corrections are there, but the gist of it is this. He says, the happy and blessed hour is when wickedness stands forth revealed as goodness bereft of a guide. Bereft of a guide. When wickedness stands forth revealed as goodness bereft of a guide. All of us have negative tendencies and positive tendencies. But when you have a guide, when you have this knowledge gone into you through a guide, you are able to control the negative and only express the positive. The fact that he is wicked, not because he has only wickedness in him, he also has goodness, he also has wickedness, but he is not able to watch, he is taken over. So, even sometimes when we do good things, it is done by our gunas, not by our choice. It is not as though you had a choice and you did it. You did it, the guna came, it took you away. Like charity.
But you watched it, right? And you let it
not pass. Necessary. That's what I am saying. Just because you did good things, doesn't mean you did it objectively. Many times we lose our objectivity when good things come. Good thoughts come in you. You need objectivity to see whether that good thought is what you should function in the context. At that point you have a good thought of helping somebody. But that fellow, if you give him some money, he will become lazy, let us say, a beggar. Not to give is the right thing then. So, anyway, a wise person should not go and unsettle the minds of the ignorant, because he doesn't know anything better. He is trapped there, he is attached. His joy, sorrow, everything is coming from that sort of living. Then if you go and confuse that fellow, he is not evolved, he is not mature to that height. You have to allow the fruit to get ripened. Then it will fall by itself. Are you with me? Even the peel can be easily removed when the fruit is ripened. So to remove that thing, the fellow has to ripen a bit. Before he ripens or she ripens, if you give them lecture and confuse the fellow, unsettle the fellow, he will be neither here nor there. You can't directly intercept. Therefore Krishna is saying, let them function, don't go and give own lectures. Immediately after the class you go back and, is this the way you all function? This is not the way to function. Is this where the towel should be? Is this where the book should be? Is this how it should be kept? Supposing you start giving lectures like this, firstly you will unsettle that person. And anybody for that matter, the moment anybody points out your mistakes, what do? You become defensive. Especially when they point it out right in front of everybody, you become very defensive. So in management they say PIP. What does PIP mean?
Punish in private,
praise in public. You praise, if at all when somebody does something good, praise that fellow in front of everybody. When you punish them private. Private also, indirectly, usually. Unless it is too gross. So, because the other person becomes very defensive. He will not be able to listen. He will not listen. See, when you on your own come and ask, and when somebody is pushing you to ask, there is a difference. So that is why we say knowledge is given. And knowledge is never given, it is taken. Knowledge is never given, it is taken. You have to receive it, you have to absorb it. So you, if you are not of that category, it will be like water sprinkled on a hot plate. As soon as it is sprinkled, it evaporates. So don't sermonize. Don't give lectures. The first emphasis always has been in Vedanta to live the knowledge. I am studying. You don't have to make everybody known. You will make such a big noise at home that everybody comes to know that, okay, she is doing sarma. And they get agitated. Quietly, you keep on doing whatever you are supposed to do, the sadhana. Then by seeing your own actions, by seeing your own calmness, by seeing your own clarity, by seeing your own ability not to be disturbed by the challenges, they will come to you. When they are seeking you, at that time you give them a lecture. At that time give them a lecture also, not sermonizing. Give them what is to be given. See, there is a story about a saint called Nagarjuna, who was a realized soul. He was, living a very, very ordinary life in a small hut, etc. And the queen was his disciple. The queen of the country was his devotee, not disciple, devotee. She one day said, Swamiji, you should come and have lunch in the palace. He said okay. So let my Bhiksha be today in the palace. So he went to the palace. He had lunch. And after the lunch she said, I'm seeing you carrying that begging bowl which is made of mud. So you please give that to me, I'll keep it with me. I wanted to give you instead of that begging bowl something else. And she gave a begging bowl, diamond studded begging bowl. He took it. He didn't say anything. He quietly left after that. While he was going, a thief saw this guy, this Swami, having begging bowl, diamond studded begging bowl. So he started following him. He wanted to take it away from him. He started walking fast. When Nagarjuna the saint started walking fast, thief also started chasing him fast. He ran so fast and quickly entered his hut, and from inside the hut he threw the begging bowl outside. The thief took it and then he entered the hut. He said, welcome, what can I do for you? Thief said, I have taken your begging bowl and you are saying welcome, what can you do for me? He said, yes, because I was running fast knowing very well that you were chasing me for this begging bowl. You did not run behind me to come and talk to me. You were running behind me for the begging bowl, diamond studded begging bowl. Since I knew this, I ran past, I entered the room and threw the begging bowl. After taking the begging bowl, now you became curious to know who this fellow who is throwing out the diamond studded begging bowl. Now you have not come inside to get anything from me except to meet me and talk to me. So I am asking you, what can I do for you? Then he said, you are a great saint, and he prostrated to him and said, I have been struggling to get rid of this habit of stealing. I tried my best, but I was not able to get rid of it. So, please tell me some method by which I can get rid of this stealing. Is that simple? There is no method without nothing. Continue stealing. What do you mean? Yes, continue stealing. Go and steal another 10 times more. Then come to me after you've completed this. But all these 10 times that you steal, please be aware. Consciously steal. You never heard this advice from any saint, because always everybody said, no, these are bad things, this is going to bring you bad karma, so chod do ye nahi karna, like that. So he tried his best, but he was always getting back to it. So he tried this, not more than 3 times he could do, he came back running. He said, I can't do this. The moment I become conscious, I can see, because the negative cannot be surviving in light, only survives in darkness. So slowly he came, alright, he did not steal. But in this story, what I want to say was, what changed that person, not his sermonizing? He did not sermonize. If he had stopped and said, why are you chasing me for this begging bowl? Diamond comes, diamond goes. Supposing he gave one big lecture. That fellow would have said, okay, enough, it comes and goes. Let it come to me now. Whenever it goes, let him go. Let it go. And then he would have taken it and gone away. Are you with me? What he did was, he did not sermonize or anything. He just lived the knowledge, went in through the begging bowl. Then that fellow entered to seek. When he entered to seek, after seek, because he lived that knowledge so attractively, that attracted him. Who is this fellow here? When you live certain principle, it actually, I'm not saying I'm as good as Nagarjuna as well, there's a long way to go, but I'm just saying when I live even small little things, I've experienced these things myself. I'm sure everybody would have experienced like this. In Dubai once, in the shopping mall, when I was going, you know, they keep on giving this free things, you can just, what do you call that? Scratch and win and all that stuff. So, one lady was there. She has to finish her things, you know. So she was saying, "Sir, please scratch my windows. This, I'm not doing this." No, no, sir, it only take hardly a minute, not more than that. No, no, it's not that I do not have time or anything. I have plenty of time. Today I'm free only. But I don't want to do this, and I was going. She was coming, running behind me and saying, "Sir, no, no, please stop." I said, "I am saying, I don't want to do. Why are you running after me?" She said, "No, no, I want to know why you do not want to do. Because you don't charge you anything for this. It's free, and you can win. I want to know because you are the only fellow, in my experience today, said no." I said, "Listen, I don't want to give any lecture, nothing. I don't want to do anything. I'm just going. Leave me alone." She said, "No, I seriously want to know. Just tell me." Then I was cornered. I said, "Okay, I don't believe in getting anything free. I don't want to." She was looking at me as if some saint or something. But believe me, nothing like that. There's a long way to go, like I said. But when you live, it does attract. Then the person sees. You understand? This is what I was saying. You seriously, genuinely wish somebody on their forever day, is birthday or wedding day, whatever it is, genuinely from your heart, and don't even expect them to wish. You shouldn't even actually know whether they wished or not. When you keep living like this, believe me, the other person will turn, that sort of living will attract the person. Then your indirect method and direct methods will work. The whole of first chapter, Lord Krishna did not lecture. He just kept quiet. Krishna said, "Take the chariot and place it in between both the armies." He indirectly taught there by taking the chariot and placing it right in front of Bhishma and Drona, and said, "See this aged Kuru and all these people who have come to fight." That's all he said. Nothing else. He never gave any lecture in the first chapter. Adi Shankara's commentary, as I told you before, starts only from the 11th verse of chapter 2. That is where Krishna starts giving the Gita, from verse 11, chapter 2. So, unwise person, not only he is attached, he doesn't know that he is attached. When you are deluded, you are not only functioning out of delusion, you are not at all aware that you are deluded. The moment you know that you are deluded, to that extent you are not deluded. So very, very interesting advice Lord Krishna is saying here. Those deluded by the gunas of Prakriti, they are functioning, carried away by their likes and dislikes and emotions, their nature. They are attached to the functions of the gunas. You can't take away the toy from the child's hand. Can you? You try if you want to. The whole house will come down. It will start at the siren sort of a thing, you know. So you will go back. You don't know what to do. You can't take it away. You play with something else. Make it attractive. Then the child will come looking at that, getting attracted by that. A soccer ball or something. Then, what is it? I want that. Okay, you want that? You give me these toys. I'll keep it with me. You play with this. Then the child will automatically do that. So therefore, the emphasis in Vedanta has always been in living the knowledge. Swami Ramtita says, "Lecture to yourself, not to others. Wanted reformers not of others, but of themselves." We are so strongly convinced one thing. What is that? Convinced about one thing. What is that?
That we know best.
Not only we know best, we are the best and everybody else is really, really bad. And unfortunately, they don't know that also. That's what you think. You are thinking that you are correct, perfect. Everybody else is imperfect. So you think, since I am perfect, I have to perfect everybody else. So Vedanta says, first and foremost, if this thought is there in you, you have not gained anything. Clearly see, keep on living that knowledge. There is so much imperfection in us. Keep correcting it. So that's why I say in my classes that a Vedantin, a true Vedantin, is a scavenger. The job of a scavenger is to keep on cleaning. So the job of a Vedantin is to keep on cleaning. You remove the gross dirts, you start becoming aware of subtle dirts. Remove those subtle dirts, subtler dirts you will start seeing. Initially you were so blindfolded that you were having so much gross dirts, but you were thinking perfectly alright. The moment Vedanta slowly little bit clears all the cataracts that you had, then gross things you start removing by effort, then you start seeing subtler and subtler and subtler dirts in you. There is no time to talk about anybody else's dirt. Because you are so busy focusing and cleansing yourself. Where is the time to sit and gossip about anybody or saying that they are bad or they are good? There is no time. If there is any help you could do, you do. But you say, there is no time for me to talk about others' dirt. Because there is so much dirt in me. So wanted reformers not of others but of themselves, says Swami Ramakrishna. That is why Vedanta nobody comes. Even if they come, slowly they drop off. Because what is this? Vedanta is so boring. It keeps on saying, I am at fault, I am at fault. Everybody else is not at fault. So like a lake collects water, fills itself from all corners. We go to the lake and draw the water. Lake doesn't come announcing, full of ya, ajao, right? It keeps on filling. Exactly like that, whatever little you study, live it. I gave you the story, I think, in the class. A Swami was approached by a person, his devotee, who's been attending classes for quite some time. He approached one day and said, Swamiji, I want to ask you something. I'm, you know, very short-tempered person. I'm getting angry every now and then. How can I control? He said, okay, come after 10 days. Why 10 days? It doesn't matter, you come after 10 days. 10 days ke baad he came. Then he gave him the advice for how to control anger. So he said, at least now tell me why 10 days. He said, I was first living that knowledge 10 days. I was making sure that I am not getting angry. Can anybody say anything these 10 days? Then I am capable of giving advice. So first live. Make it attractive. Then those who seek, to them you can give. So remember, 26, 29 is saying the same thing, but between this he is given the reason for why you should live like that. So 27, 28, 28 is a reason. What is the reason? Guna, Prakriti and Purusha. So when you clearly have the Prakriti Purusha Viveka, Viveka means discrimination, knowledge, wisdom. So when you know the distinction between Prakriti and Purusha, why anybody is functioning like this? Because of gunas. Why did Iago function the way he functioned? Why did Othello function the way he functioned? Why did Desdemona function the way she functioned? Gunas. Right? The gunas are different. But essentially everybody is divine. That you should not forget. Since a wise person has this knowledge, he is not going to become judgmental about anybody. He clearly sees, poor fellow, he got attached and therefore he is suffering. Therefore, even at the time when he is doing such terrible thing, he says, is there any way in which we can help him to see the attachment? So you think, why even now you are functioning that? That is guna. The guna of the saint is to, even at that time he is abusing him so much, even at that time he is thinking how to make this person understand that he is attached. His worry is not about this fellow is abusing me, what will happen to my name and fame and all these things. He is thinking, even at this time, is there any possibility of helping him to make him free from his attachment? A benefactor is taken to be a malefactor and crucified in the case of Jesus Christ. Jesus Christ was the benefactor, isn't it? And he was mistook, he was mistaken to be a malefactor. And this is what we are doing. We are so confused, we are keeping all those people who boost our ego and everything and say they are my fast friends. Right? And those who really beat you black and blue, where they agitate you, just can't stand that person, I tell you. Because they are not consciously, they are not doing it for your growth maybe. But actually they are the ones who are good for your growth.
Critics may be good, but not people who harm.
People who harm, they keep you sharp.
That is fine.
That is why the nature provides you such things. Nature has to provide you these things to keep you growing. See, remember, life has to have certain essential things in life. Otherwise it is not life. What are they? Like consciousness, growth, freedom, love, action. If these things are missing in your life, then your life is insipid. There has to be growth. We have to move, na? Last week 28, this week 28, next week 28, then na? Growth hona chahiye, in every sense. Are you with me? You got to keep on growing.
Huh? All these irritants. So you need all the irritants in your life.
Believe me, once you understand these things correctly, you will not have the... you will enjoy it. When somebody is functioning like that. Enjoy the sense, not that, okay, let them function like that. The poor fellow, like Jesus Christ said, Father, forgive them, they know not what they are doing.
To realize that, yeah.
Exactly. So, exactly how... See, what is forgiveness? We keep talking about forgiveness. You should have the quality of forgiveness. Who are you or me to forgive anybody? But yet, why do these scriptures keep talking about the quality of forgiveness? Forgiveness is simple. I also have mistakes, blemishes. And I am trapped in those areas. How not to be ruled over, bulldozed by the weaknesses, I am not able to figure out. Therefore, I get succumbed to the weaknesses in me. Just like how I succumb to my weaknesses sometimes and function, this fellow has succumbed to his weakness and he functions like this. Just this understanding is called forgiveness. There is a forget and forgive. If you have forgotten, what is there to forgive? And you can't forget. So this is not forgiveness. To say that I forgive you, as if you are somebody superior to forgive somebody else. The fact that I say I forgive you means I'm saying you have made a mistake, I am good, you are bad, and I am forgiving. This is the ego is involved there. So therefore, really speaking, what is forgiveness? I understand my limitations. The fact that I am able to understand my limitations, I am able to understand others' limitations. Were you able to control your anger, your greed, whatever it is? So how justified are you in expecting that others should also not express it when you yourself are not able to control it? It is a simple understanding. So guna guneshu vartante iti matvana sajjate. Having understood this, a wise person doesn't sermonize. He understands they are attached to their gunas. I am detached to my gunas. That's the only difference. When he or she will also detach us, he can also do. See, it's simple. Whenever you learn any sports, initially you think this is impossible for me. Like for example, even for this sports, car driving, you see that fellow, especially in India, when an expert guy who has been driving for quite some time, in one hand he has a cigarette, in between his ear and his shoulder there is a mobile phone, right, like this, and a cigarette, and in the other hand he is probably using a mobile phone, and he is just driving. I am not saying this is a good example to follow, but this is how he is that. But initially when you are learning to drive, how do you hold the steering tight? And you think, you can't see this side or that side also. Then you say, you have to see this mirror, left side ka mirror, right side ka mirror, then middle mein ek hai. Oh my God, you don't know what to do, right? You think, how is all possible? How is it is all possible? You think it is impossible. But you are the one who is having learned all these things, now you probably do the same thing what that guy is doing. How come? So what is the difference? That technique you know, technique of driving, that person doesn't know the technique. But once he gets that technique, he also can drive like you. So, I am detached, I have the technique of being detached, I know. I was also attached once upon a time. I learned it, I got this technique of being detached. Poor fellow, he hasn't got it. That's all the difference. Once he gets it, he will also be like me. So till he gets it, I will be patient with it. So if you are impatient, which means what? You have also not got the technique. Because you also got attached somewhere. See, we also have our patients also run out. Because our level of understanding is also only up to that. Somewhere down the line we also break. So therefore he said, allow the person to ripen. Once he ripens, he will also automatically fall. You must set an example. That has been his emphasis from verse 21. He said King Janaka in 20, with the example of King Janaka, and 21 he said, you must set an example, and if you see me, I am also setting an example. I don't want to act, there is nothing to do for me, yet I act. So you should set an example, and you will see unwise people getting attached. Don't give them lectures, continue giving your directions to them only through your life, through your action. Why are they attached? Because they do not have Prakriti Purusha Viveka. Since you have Prakriti Purusha Viveka, you better behave. That's all. Verse 30. Mayi sarvani karmani, mayi sarvani karmani, sanyasya vyatma chetasa, sanyasya vyatma chetasa, nirashir nirmamo bhutva, yudhyasva vigata jvaraha, mayi sarvani karmani, sanyasya vyatma chetasa, nirashir nirmamo bhutva, yudhyasvavigatajvaraha. Now what do you mean by wise person setting an example? How is he supposed to set an example? How is he supposed to make the action more attractive? that is given in verse 30. Verse 30 is considered to be the blueprint of right action. Technique of right action. Because always has been saying, na, wise person should make the action attractive. Attractive. What will make it attractive? What is the right action? How does one function correctly? So this technique of right action is given in verse number 30. This is in a way a summary of what he has been saying till now also. So he is saying, Mai sarvani karmani sanyasya. Sanyasya means renounce. Renouncing all actions. Sarvani karmani. All actions at all levels. Body level, mind level, intellect level, jobi level, you are functioning. Whatever might be the action. All actions surrender, renounce in me. Renouncing all actions in me. Mai, in me. Mai sarvani karmani sanyasya. Adhyatma chetasaha. By thoughts resting on the self. With your thoughts focused on me. With your thoughts directed, established, resting on me. On the self. Nirashi. Asha means what? Hope. Desire. Nirashi. Without hope. Without hope doesn't mean live hopelessly. What it means is without hoping for the future. Nirmama. Without attachment. Without attachment to the past. Without worries of the past.
Without attachment to the past.
Yeah. Attachment to the past and whatever you have achieved till now. Yudhyasva. Yudhyasva means fight. Fight. Fight in the context here, it is the context of the battle. And the lecture is given to the Kshatriya with the background of warfare. Therefore, Krishna is saying, fight, means do your duty. So here, fight means action, duty. Karma. Fight doesn't mean you have to fight with everybody. Yudhyasva. Yudhyasva means face your challenges. Do your duty. Action. How? Vigata jwaraha. Jwara means fear. Vigata jwara means without fear.
Yes.
Without fever, fever. Jwara. Jwara means fever.
Fever or fear?
Fever.
So it's like calming without.
Yes, without excitement.
Without anger.
Without excitement. Fever. Fever is doing. Act to. Come on, come on, come on. Let's get. Let's getting it. You understand? That's sort of a excitement.
Agitation.
Excitement. Fever is doing. Without any, what do you call it? Restlessness, feverish. So, Mai sarvani karmani sanyasya, adhyatma chetasa, nirashir nirmama bhutva, having functioning without attachment. Without desire, hope, fever, do your action. So this is what he is saying is karma yoga. Any action, if it is right action, it will generate energy. If you do things wrongly, it will dissipate energy. Right action should generate energy. When you overdo or underdo, what happens?
Tired.
You get tired. So, there are two aspects to right action. One is the action should generate energy and it should stop the energy that is getting dissipated in the unproductive channels. So the technique is, you must conserve the energy that is getting dissipated into the wrong channels, into the unproductive channels, and direct that energy that is conserved thus towards a goal, a higher goal. Then that will produce, generate energy in you. So firstly, you must make sure that your efforts are not being dissipated in unproductive channels. What are the unproductive channels? Past worries, future anxiety, present excitement. Worries of the past, anxiety of the future, excitement in the present. Your intellect must come and control your mind from dissipating the energy in all these unproductive channels.
What about the present,
future anxiety and present excitement?
So your intellect must come and...
What are
these? Unproductive channels.
Unproductive channels.
Past worries. Something which is past is dead and gone.
That?
Somebody asked the master.
Past is so much part of our.
No, I'll explain, please. Listen. Past, you are saying, the disciple asked the master, past you are saying we should disconnect ourselves from. Why are you saying so, sir? Because not all my pasts are bad. Not all my past experiences are bad. So why are you telling me to disconnect myself from my past? That's the question he asked the master. The master replied, I am telling you to disconnect from the past not because all your pasts are bad, simply because everything that is past is dead. I hope you understand something out of it. Whether it is good or bad, it is dead. Would you sit when somebody very near and dear dies? I believe monkeys do so. When the child monkey, which is hugging on to the mother one, dies, it doesn't leave it. It holds on to it, I believe. Then when the germs start eating, and when it starts eating the monkey, then it leaves it. So like that, going on and on, getting stuck with the past. See, I've said this in different contexts before. For a child to play with toys is okay. But the child should grow up and play with something else. Right? Supposing, on your wedding day, you go and sit next to your bride or bridegroom with a teddy bear. Huh? I mean, what? You're laughing, I know why you're laughing.
Let's say do. Yeah, Archie's that.
What?
Yeah. And why on Valentine's Day and all, they're all teddy bears.
I don't know what they do it for. I know also few people. I'm giving this teddy bear example because I know. Teddy bear, you see, you're still playing with teddy bear. Feeding the teddy bear and all this, supposing you're doing it.
No, that's a bit.
Okay. See, in other words, there was a time when you did it. You grow.
I think a teddy bear per se symbolizes hug. So that's why a teddy bear.
This teddy bear example is a wrong example. You something else. All I'm saying is toy. You grow from the toy world. It was okay for you to have played with toy world when you were a small child. Now grow. So in other words, to be in contact is not sin. To get stuck there and not move ahead is sinful. So that is why I keep saying in our classes that stagnation is sinful. Even when we are studying the Gita, till we establish ourselves, we can all fall. It's not as though we don't fall, right? Sometimes you also get angry and you shout at your servants or you shout out at somebody else, your children, then you say, why am I behaving like this? I'm studying Gita for the last so many years, I'm behaving like this. Why are? So Swamiji says, whenever you fall, don't fall like a lead plate. Fall like a rubber ball, so that you rise again. To stagnate there is sinful, even when you fall. Right? I said something out of jealousy. Oh, why did I say that? Why did I say that? How could I function like that? I am a very bad person. Going on and thinking about it. Yes, I did that. It's wrong. It's bad. Fine. Now, chalo, move. Stagnating, you know. So not necessarily all your past experiences are bad. They are dead. From dead experiences, whatever we could learn, we learn and move. Huh? If we can't bring the experiences into the present context, you don't move. In India, we keep saying our history is more than 10,000 years, 25,000 years, all this nonsense. Your history is only 200 years. We keep saying like this. So what? But what if your history is 5,000 years old?
The thing is that you always have this example of you reap what you sow. So then what you're sowing is always in the past and you're reaping it now in the present. How does that, I mean, that is one thing which I always get.
No, we'll discuss this separately.
This is separate.
We'll separate. What you sow, you reap, we'll discuss that separately. When we take up the question and answer thing, we'll discuss that. But in this context here, what he's saying is, past is there. You had gone through those experiences. Now they are dead. As far as those experiences are concerned, they are dead. What do I learn from that? I bring it on the table in today's context. Use it.
So I don't live in the past experience.
Exactly.
But use it to
learn from the past, put it into use in the present. That is not, Vedanta is not against that. Similarly, future is something that is unborn. Right? So Vedanta, when it says don't be anxious of the future, it doesn't mean that you should not have a goal.
So you can plan for the future.
It's like this.
Corporate goals, they have.
Absolutely.
Plan.
Forget all that. Take simple example. If you want to go somewhere and you know that Diwali go, I'm going to be there. Like for example, people go to Calcutta for this Dashara time. You know, but every Dashara I am going to go. Supposing that's what you want to do, you like to do, your goal is during Dashara you want to be there. And you know it is going to cost you less if you book your tickets well in advance. Right? You have to book your ticket advance. So that is not saying don't live in future. Therefore, I will directly go to the airport and buy the ticket. Then they say flight is full. Then you say Vedanta has told me. Vedanta never told these things. You misunderstood Vedanta. What Vedanta is saying, Vedanta is not saying don't plan and book your ticket. Having booked the ticket, now the every day you are thinking, when is the Dashara coming? And maybe will the flight take off that day? Will the flight doesn't take off, who is going to be sitting next to me? Supposing this, all this nonsense you don't think.
The attachment to the past.
Plan future ke liye karna us samay wo present ka kaam hai. I said these things when we did verse 47 chapter 2. You, there is not an excuse because you got the series. Maybe you haven't come to that level, that's okay. So you are probably excused. So all these people are not excused. Verse 47, Karmani eva adhikaraha ma phaleshu kadachana ma karma hetur boho ma te sangostva karmani. We discussed these things, we explained all these things before also. What surprises me is you are able to give me that look as we are hearing for the first time. that is something very interesting. So the thing is, you see, Vedanta to plan is the present form, that time. So you focus then, planning becomes the present action. Do that. But having planned, putting those, working those plans into action is the present thing. Then you still not going to go on building on, keep building on that actions. What will happen? How is it going to happen? Cross the bridge when it comes. And as you see new data coming in, change. So Vedanta never said don't have a goal or anything. So firstly, these three things let us understand. Past, present, future mein, worries of the past is the unproductive channel. Anxiety of the future is the unproductive channel. Excitement in the present is unproductive. Doing action in the present is productive. But getting excited in the present is unproductive. It is not only unproductive to you, it wrongly influences your entire team. Suppose you are the captain of a team, cricket team. And you are getting excited because they are saying 10 balls, 20 runs, and you are getting excited. The captain is showing excitement. Everybody else is tense. It is unproductive. Just by getting excited, nothing is going to happen. Not only nothing is going to happen, in fact, wrong will happen. You will get, you lose your wicket only.
Excitement can be positive at all. You get excited about something that, oh, okay, now I'm going to win. That's good excitement. That's throwing good.
So many people have lost like that.
No, that is different.
That's what happens when you get excited. There has to be.
In control of yourself.
Absolutely. When you are excited, you are. You make mistakes. You commit mistakes. Only when your mind is calm, your intellect is sharp. And your action will be
6 inches.
You missed 6 inches. <spot. laughs> So I understand what you mean. When you get excited, that's what happens. There was this tournament, I think it was British Open golf. Tiger Woods did triple bogey. I'm talking about this other guy. What was his name? Allen or somebody from Australia. He was the one leading,
yes.
9 under par.
And then he
else was, he finished all his 18 holes with 7 under par. And this fellow was 9 under par. He kept on making, what do you call, bogeys. And then if the last hole,
okay,
he had just did it par,
yeah.
He would have been minus under 7.
Yeah,
but he did bogey.
Yeah,
he did bogey. So he went to 6 under par. He gifted the cup to onions. Excitement. That's what makes it interesting, right? So you are saying excitement is never good. In the excitement, you may come out of the house when the house is on fire, leaving your child inside. Excitement may people do all sorts of nonsense.
Because you're not in control.
Exactly.
So does Vedanta believe in destiny? Or do we ourselves come?
Vedanta doesn't believe in anything. If you want to put it that way, Vedanta goes by logic. So as far as Vedanta, when it talks about destiny,
future.
It talks about actions determining your destiny. Not somebody sitting in the clouds deciding your destiny. Like Swami Ramakrishna says, if there was somebody sitting up the cloud, poor fellow, he'll catch cold, he says. So in other words, there's nobody sitting up the cloud creating your destiny. Vedanta says this, you're not punished or rewarded for your actions. You are punished or rewarded by your actions. The difference is for and by between these two words. You're not punished or rewarded for your actions. It's not the same.
By your own actions.
For me, somebody else, judge is giving you the punishment. By means your own action is giving you the punishment.
You're punishing yourself.
You're punished by your own.
You carved your own.
Exactly. So, all these unproductive channels you have to free yourself. And then what you are supposed to do? He says, your thoughts should rest on the self. Self is the highest that one can conceive of. Right? So you must pitch up a higher goal. That's what it means. Thoughts resting on the self means something beyond your selfish, self-centered interest. Whenever anybody functions selfishly, you find their energy getting sapped. When a soldier has dedicated himself for the cause of the country, and the war is going on, and is able to fight it out. I don't know, I can only give you this example, which happened recently. Recently means a year ago or so, when this, I think it was last Australian Open only, I think, between Djokovic and Nadal. Australian Open, tennis. Almost 6 hours they played. Mm. I was watching it. Went on midnight. Yes. 6 hours, right? Because the last set is never a tiebreaker. When it comes to the fifth set, they don't go to the tiebreaker. They have to have 2 point lead always, two game leads. So 6-5, then it will become 7-6. It's going on like that. I forget now when they finished, but when they were playing, it seemed like they will never get tired. Like machines they were playing, both of them. And after that, and well, they'll say, and then they'll take some water and then they'll wipe their sweat and all that. And again and again, they play like as if they are having so much energy. When the match was over, finally Djokovic won the match. Prize distribution was going on. They could not stand there. They in fact gave them chairs to sit. Now what I'm saying is, when they had goal for which they had surrendered, there was so much energy. When you are functioning just for yourself, there is no energy. When a labor leader walks into the cabin of the management, and the top guys are sitting, and he has gone inside to talk to them about providing the rain boot for the employees, for the laborers, because the rainy season is coming, has started. So he's saying, you must provide the rain boots or umbrella, whatever. Right? How he talks. Next day, he is walking into the same management cabin, wanting to ask for a job for his son. What happens to all this? It's different. When you have expectations, it saps your energy. When you have only thing to offer, there is no sapping of energy. So thoughts resting on the self means, also actually it means to be aware. Self means what? Consciousness. Thoughts on the self means, today when you are acting, your desire has taken away all your attention towards the object. You are not aware there when the action is going on. Most of you understand and follow golf, right? When you probably are playing also. Now, many times you tend to look ahead and not the ball. When your eyes are taken off from the ball, you know, from the sound of the contact, you know that you made a mistake. The club beats the ball. And when you were just looking at the ball, and you beat it so perfectly, you know, it's gone. So, thoughts resting on the self means awareness. So self is the subtlest in you. Body, mind, intellect, Atma. Not everybody can go to the level of Atma directly. Therefore you say, whatever level you are able to project and see, to that height you project your goal. If somebody is working only for oneself, you can't tell him, identify the self and function. He doesn't know what is self and function. He is just all the time looking at his body only. He is not even, you know, able to relate at the level of family. So you tell that fellow, pitch up the goal to the level of your family. That is more easy for him, relatively. So pitch up a higher goal is one meaning, adhyatma chetasa. The other thing is, your attention should be on the consciousness, which means being objective. See, the moment you bring in consciousness, objectivity comes into play. Objectivity means object and subject. You are the subject executing the action. You are aware of all these things and you are being there as a witness, not as somebody who has been carried away by the desire or the result of the action. Today, whenever I am doing the action, am I conscious? Many times, my desires, my results have taken over my awareness. I am hardly aware. When I hit the shot and when the ball is not gone anywhere, it's gone just here and there, then I try to understand what happened, then I realize I took the eyes off the ball. Isn't it? So, adhyatma chetasa, pitch up a higher goal. Then mind should surrender to that goal. Mind is what likes and dislikes. Idhar udhar jane ke liye, it will plan. So you surrender that mind to the higher goal. Adhyatma chetasa, mai sarvani karmani sanyasya. All your actions should be dedicated for that goal. When your mind surrenders to the goal and your intellect has pitched up the goal and mind has surrendered to the goal, and when your body acts, yutyasva means fight, when your body acts dynamically towards that goal, clipping the past worries, future anxiety and present excitement, it becomes perfect action. So perfect action ke liye, there is awareness backing the action. Firstly, action should be there, which is backed by the awareness. Then the attitude is what sort of attitude? The attitude is, I am there doing the action as a giver, not as a taker, without expectation. Surrendering the mind. Mind should surrender to the goal. Mera is not important. Tera. I am a part of the organization. I am the part of the organization, and these are my obligations towards the organizational goal. Every organization has, must have, should have, and has mission and vision. To attain that mission of the organization, you must have a vision, and that vision encompasses so many people who are part of that vision. He does this job, you do that job, understand? Pion does this, etc. I surrender my ego. Mera, I surrender. Then tera, the organization is taken. This is called surrendering. Renouncing all actions in me. In me means for the total. Here me means total. That is why if you see Swamiji's translation, me is given in capital M. If it is small n, then it is mera. If it is capital N, it is total, it is Atma. When Krishna is speaking, whenever any selfless master say me, they mean self, Atma. Not like how you and me use the word me. He is not talking about the personality. He is talking about the Atma. So me means total. Renouncing the ego for the total. This is the attitude, right? Today my attitude is what I will get. That means ego. What is to be done? Then it is Mayi Sarvani Karmani Sanyasya. Are you with me? So awareness, action must be backed with awareness and the right attitude. When these are there, you do the action without getting anxious about the future. Meaning, having set my direction and awareness, I can do the action. Whatever result comes, I accept. Acceptance. So action, awareness, attitude, acceptance. This acceptance is nirashir and nirmama. Manness, I am doer.
Action,
awareness, attitude, acceptance. A higher altitude goals. And I am the doer attitude should not be there. Nirmama. Mama means mamakara, mind. My action. Mamakara should not be there. If the mamakara is there, to that extent the action suffers. Isn't it? Yudhyasva. Just do your duty, action, without mindness. My action. One is what I will get. Other one is my action. I am doing it. I am not doing, the gunas are doing. I am only a witness. We studied about it, right? So then you are being a witness there. You are not doing it with the attitude of I am the doer. So with all these things, when they perform the action is right action. So the inside ko teek karna chahiye, that is very important. When the mind takes over, your attention goes to the result. Your attention goes to the ego, the doer. When the mind is controlled by the intellect, by jnanam, then the attention is on the action, not on the fruit or ego. The biggest problem is ego and the fruit. Action cannot give you stress. It is the ego that gives you the stress. It is the doership that gives you the stress. It is the part and the fruit that gives you the stress. Action per se cannot give you the stress. Therefore he is saying, remove all these things. We are thinking it is the action that is giving us the stress. So therefore what do? We take off from work, then go to some spa. Or play golf. Something like that. So the idea is not to get away from action. The idea is to get rid of the ego. Once the ego and the fruit is removed, then the same action is incapable of giving you stress. So Vedanta clearly maintains that action never gives you stress. It is your attitude. It is your lack of altitude. It is your lack of awareness. Action minus the sense of indispensability. Minus should not be there. When the sense of indispensability is there, I'm indispensable, then the action will give you stress, excitement and all these things. We'll look at this in detail next week. Oh.
पूर्णमुदच्यते पूर्णस्य पूर्णमादाय पूर्णमेवावशिष्यते ओम शांति शांति शांति